Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brave.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. This is a special bonus episode. This is the next installment in my AWA Deep Dive series. And today we are flashing back and looking at AWA in July of 1988. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us for this. I hope you're having fun with these, because I certainly am. I know the AWA in 1988 is not always looked upon as a prime example of the promotion or just wrestling in general. But I have a very nostalgic place in my heart for the AWA from this time period all the way up through the end of it in 1991. So hopefully you're enjoying taking a little closer look. As I said, this is a deep dive into the AWA, July 1988. I will discuss the TV results, news, rumors, pulled from wrestling newsletters, house show results, plus I'll include a few audio clips. Basically, I'll be giving a chronological telling of the month in AWA history. I started this series with May 1988, and you can check out the previous months in the Wrestling Nostalgia archives. Let's take a little break. When we come back, we're going to dive right into July 1988 in AWA history. So stick around.
Welcome to Las Vegas, Nevada, the entertainment capital of the world. Home to movie stars, entertainment leaders, and the American Wrestling Association, the Major League of Professional Wrestling. Seen by you, the greatest wrestling fans in the world. In the United States, Europe, United Kingdom, South America, Japan, the Middle East. Now, let's go to the Showboat Hotel and Casino.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade. So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. All right. So coming into July 1988, we still have the same champions in the AWA as we've had in May and June. Jerry Lawler is the AWA World Champion. Bad Company, Paul Diamond and Pat Tanaka are the World Tag Team Champions. Greg Gagne is the International TV Champion. And Medusa Michelli is the AWA Women's Champion. Let me give you again a little recap on what's going on with AWA TV. There are two AWA TV shows. On both shows, Rod Trongard and Lee Marshall handled the majority of the commentary. And Larry Nelson hosted and did some ring announcing and interviews. There were segments hosted by Greg Gagne, the Matt Classic segment. Big K, Stan Kowalski, the Big K No segment, and Danya Gagne, Fan of the Week. By this time, all the TV tapings were being done at the Showboat Arena in Las Vegas. Now, the two shows are the long-running syndicated AWA show, which is All-Star Wrestling, and then there was the show that was on ESPN, which a lot of fans remember, and that is Championship Wrestling. So there you have a little background on the TV shows. So let's dive right into the month. We start off on July 2nd, 1988, the episode of All-Star Wrestling. Running through it, T-Jo Khan defeated Mike Luka. And as watching this, I have to wonder, with as much TV times as T-Jo Khan and Soledad Yusinov got, how did they not become tag champs, right? How did they not give them a run with the belts? Because, man, they are on TV all the time with matches and interviews and comments, just a lot. But Khan won this match with a heart punch. Then we go on to have John Paul and Ricky Rice comments. They're not yet being billed as the top guns on the show, but we're very close to that, as you'll see here in a bit. Bill Abner has his segment where he talks to Big K Stan Kowalski. They talk a bit about Kowalski's career, who Big K is, and everything else. This is a pretty decent little segment, but it's something I felt they should have done weeks ago because, you know, a lot of people would watch this and see the Big K Knows segment and can maybe kind of wonder. So I think they were a little late, but it's a good segment to have to explain who Kowalski is. Cousin Luke defeated Tony Leone, and this was Luke's debut on AWA television. We get some post-match comments from Cousin Luke. The Fan of the Week segment with Danya Gagne is Baron Von Raschke talks about how the Iron Claw works in this segment, because that's the question sent in by the fan on how the Iron Claw works. So Baron explains that in his way. Next match, Manny Fernandez defeated David Koreshin. They're really pushing the Fernandez versus Wahoo McDaniel feud. We'll find out here later in the month that's really going to heat up. So stand by for more of that coming up. There are post-match comments from Fernandez where he does talk about Wahoo McDaniel. Then we go into the break with some comments from Medusa Michelli. And we come back with Larry Nelson talking to Vern Gagne about the Olympic trials, and Vern is still pushing amateur wrestling on his TV in 1988. And I don't know. I mean, I know Vern has a soft spot for amateur wrestling. I know he likes amateur wrestlers. I don't know the crossover appeal here, whether pro wrestling fans are that into amateur wrestling. I mean, they're not spending huge amounts of time on it, but I guess it's okay, right? I mean, it's Vern's passion segment, so be it. We go on with Greg Gagne to the Matt Classic segment. This is a 1983 match with Bobby Duncombe versus Wahoo McDaniel. Then we go on to the Big K Knows segment, where he talks about many things, but talks a lot about the Top Guns tag team, right? He does refer to them as that in this segment here. We get some comments going to the commercial break from Baron Von Raschke. Come back with some comments from Soledad Yusinov and T-Jo Khan. And then we have the main event is Medusa Michelli and Brandy May, who go to a time limit draw. As you watch this match, I mean, Brandy sells her gimmick well, but she is very, very green. Medusa's trying. She's trying to work and bring Mandy up. Brandy is a little green. And then after the match, before and after the match, we get comments from Magnificent Mimi, who they're really, really pushing hard as the next challenger for Medusa Michelli. We go into the next TV show, July 2nd, 1988, Championship Wrestling. This show just looks to be a repackaging of the All-Star Wrestling show, but it does have two different matches on the tail end of it. And those are Jerry Lawler with defeated Chris Curtis, and then Robert Gibson and Greg Gagne, defeated Bad Company by DQ. This was a match for the tag titles. They announced that Ricky Morton couldn't make it because his plane missed the connection. But as we discussed, I believe last month, in actuality, Ricky Morton has gone on vacation because the Rock and Roll Express are about to go back to WCW, and Morton decides, I'm going to take some time off. But Robert Gibson still does go out and fulfills their date obligation, so that's why he's here. But they make an excuse for Ricky on TV. Before the match, DDP introduces Bad Company. And this was a pretty good tag team match, and the crowd was definitely into it. And it was a lot of fun. And then after the match, we get some comments for Gagne and Gibson, you know, a lot of mutual respect. We're still coming for the titles, et cetera, et cetera. Your typical type things there. So we move on to the television show on July 9th, 1988, All-Star Wrestling. Wahoo McDaniel defeated Chris Curtis. Wahoo, he kind of works, a ground attack on Curtis, keeps him on the mat, works with a lot of chops, and then pinned him with a double underhook suplex. Kind of a weak finish, but, you know, whatever. Wahoo looked pretty good in the match. It kept him strong. Then they go on to a kind of a highlight package talking about the rivalry between Medusa Michelli and Magnificent Mimi. Vern Gagne interviews amateur wrestlers Dennis and Dwayne Kozlowski. Here we are again with the amateur wrestlers, but apparently these two are twins, wrestling twins, who are going on to the Olympics this year. So Vern talks to them about that. And then we go to Diamond Dallas Page is in the ring, and he introduces the AWA World Tag Team Champions Bad Company. So Bad Company then go on to defeat Pete Sanchez and Mike Luka. It's a pretty one-sided tag team victory by the champions. Then we go into comments from John Paul and Ricky Rice, the Top Guns, who are talking about how they're coming for Bad Company, have their eye on the tag titles. We go to the Fan of the Week segment with Gagne, which contained a segment about with Medusa Michelli riding a horse at some kind of rodeo show. I'm not real familiar with these things. But she's there, and she rides the horse, does a couple kind of ground trick type things. I'm not real familiar with the terminology, but kind of an interesting segment there, I suppose. We come back with Mondo Guerrero defeating Brian Costello. A pretty solid match here. Really showcases Mondo's skills. He really stands out on this show for those he wrestles a Guerrero style, and it really does stand out on this AWA television show. Then we get more comments from Sold at Usanoff and Tejo Khan, where they talk about Ricky Rice and John Paul. That match is coming up on a future episode of TV, so they're starting to plug it. We then go on to the AWA Matt Classic with Greg Gagne. It's a 1984 match featuring Mr. Saito versus Kurt Hennig. Then the Big K-Do segment with Stan Kowalski talking about the AWA Women's Division. You know, I've got a lot of respect for Stan Kowalski and what he's done, and everything else. I just don't know whether these Big K-No segments are accomplishing anything. Having him come on and give kind of his heel-sided remarks, but I just don't know. I don't know what the purpose is, right? What it's really doing. Why not, if you're going to have him do this kind of thing, why not put him on a broadcast team, right? Have him call matches and let him give his heel-sided opinions in that way, or make him a manager or so. I don't know. I don't think these segments are very effective to what they're hoping to accomplish here. Then we go on to Bill Apter, his segment where he interviews Baron Von Raschke. And then our main event for the show is Greg Gagne and Kurt Hennig go to a double countout. It's a really good back and forth match. We all know how good Kurt Hennig is, but this match kind of shows that Greg Gagne is very underappreciated. He's a very good worker. And this was a really solid match. And then we move on to the next TV episode, July 9th, 1988, Championship Wrestling. This show, again, it's a repackaging of the All-Star Wrestling show with one additional match, and that match is the main event. Jerry Lawler defeats Soldat Ustinov, a pretty basic babyface versus heel, USA versus Soviet Union type match. A typical kind of Lawler match there. So, all right, then we move on. We have a house show, July 9th, 1988. It's in Columbus, Nebraska. The reported attendance is 2,180, which is decent for the AWA. Some of their shows are well beneath that in attendance. The show was part of the Platte County Fair. And it looks like the results are showing that Ricky Rice and John Paul defeated champions Bad Company by disqualification. Wahoo McDaniel and Baron Von Raschke defeated Sold Out Usanoff and Tejo Khan. Derek Dukes wrestled Tejo Khan to a draw. Ricky Rice defeated Pat Tanaka by DQ. And then Sold Out Usanoff defeated Baron Von Raschke. So kind of a small crew there. It's kind of their highlight guys. Again, the AW has a very small core group of wrestlers here. But, you know, for a fair show, that's probably why it drew in the 2000s, right? Being a fair show. Not a bad little show for the fair there. All right, now we have, from Dave Meltzer, we have some notes from the July 11th issue of the Wrestling Observer. He talks about that July 9th show in Columbus, Nebraska. He said it was advertised as having Curt Hennig versus Wahoo McDaniel for the AWA title, even though Curt Hennig lost the title 2 months earlier. Plus had advertised the Terminators versus the Rock and Roll Express, even though neither tag team are any longer in the company. And DJ Peterson versus Larry Cameron, even though neither are in the company as well. This is something Dave talks about a lot in The Observer, and there is some truth to it, obviously. The AWA are at this point in history, they're bad about misadvertising, right? Now, some of it is, right, there are matches that were going to happen at one point. Then since they don't have guys necessarily in contracts and guys are, you know, wrestlers are going other places and doing other things, things are changing, but they're not changing the advertising in any way, shape, or form, even if there is plenty of time. Some of them, I mean, I don't know. I guess they're advertising matches like a DJ Peterson versus Larry Cameron. I guess they're advertising on the intention, the hopes that these guys are going to come in and then they don't end up making it. I don't know. But their advertising leaves a little to be desired. I don't want to say it's shady and being false advertising because I don't know whether that's the intent going into it. I just think they're not very reactive to when things change, the roster changes, you know, the crew changes, to making adjustments, or just focusing the advertising to say that, you know, hey, with, you know, appearances by Curt Hennig and this so-and-so and so-and-so, instead of advertising specific matches that might change, just maybe advertising the talent. They don't seem to have that aspect of things very together. We move on to another house show, July 14th, 1988, at the Celebrity Theater in Anaheim, California. See, this one, a reported attendance of 200. See, there we go. Very, very low attendance for the AWA on this show. It saw AWA World Heavyweight Champion Jerry Lawler defeat Curt Hennig. Chavo and Mondo Guerrero defeated the AWA World Tag Team Champions Bad Company by disqualification. The Magnificent Mimi defeated AWA World's Women's Champion Medusa Michelli by disqualification. Rocky Mountain Thunder defeated Daryl Nickel, and the Samoan Tawa defeated Crusher Krugnoff. Then they had another house show that was shown on the calendar for July 15th, 1988, something called the Celebrity Theater as well. I don't know if that's a mistype on where I read or if there is indeed another Celebrity Theater in Phoenix, Arizona. There are no results or lineups for that show. So, I'm not even 100% sure if it took place, as AWA did have to cancel shows here and there because of low sales, etc. So, I don't know whether that show took place or not. So we move on to the July 16th, 1988 episode of All Star Wrestling. We open with Cousin Luke defeating Chris Curtis. Cousin Luke is accompanied to the ring by Brandy May. And in case you don't know, Cousin Luke is Jean Petit, who was also in the WWE as Cousin Luke. He was there for a while during the highlight of the hillbilly craze in the WWE, that where Vince, you know, really liked the hillbillies. And this was a basic match here with some of the hillbilly comedy spots. The crowd actually chanted boring at a few points. You can very clearly hear them on the broadcast. So, and after the match, we have some comments from Cousin Luke with Larry Nelson. So let's get our first audio segment here. Let's listen to these comments. Larry Nelson talking to Cousin Luke prior to his victory over Chris Curtis.
Congratulations on another great victory.
Oh, thank you very much. I had a little inspiration over here in the corner.
It's called Country Cousin. Brandy, good to have you out here.
Well, thank you. I've known Cousin Luke quite a long time, and I was very proud to come out and help him out country style and be his backup.
Well, it was an excellent combination. It worked out real well. You're starting to tear him up here in the AWA, big fella.
Every Saturday night, there's two things. We either take a bath or we have a hoedown. So we're going to have a hoedown, all right?
Hoedown, ladies and gentlemen, on Saturday night at the boat. Brandy, honey, you look great. Thanks for stepping out here and talking to me.
Thanks for having me, and I'm very proud to be here. Thank you,
brother. Oh, yeah, Luke. Oh, no. Okay. Cousin Luke and Brandy Mae, ladies and gentlemen.
That I sort of envied Larry, but
in one way, yes, in another way, no.
Okay, and after those comments then, as you see, you know, again, Cousin Luke playing up, you know, not a bad promo, but really playing up the hillbilly thing and everything else, kind of your stereotypical stuff with that gimmick. Then we move on to Bill Apter in his interview segment that he's been having here on the shows lately. And he interviews the Top Guns, John Paul and Ricky Rice. And as hot as the Top Guns are right now, as much as they're being pushed, I wanted to play this audio so we get a little preview of this. Again, this is John Paul and Ricky Rice, Top Guns. This is prior to Derek Dukes teaming with Ricky Rice and the Top Guns. Right now, it's still John Paul and Ricky Rice. So, but let's listen to that. Bill Apter with John Paul and Ricky Rice.
Illustrated Magazine, this is Senior Editor Bill Apter with another special AWA press conference. Today, a team that's been called the All-Americans, the American Boys, America's newest heroes, talking about John Paul and Ricky Rice. First of all, Ricky, how did you two get together?
Well, let me tell you, Bill, Johnny and I, we grew up together, we've trained together, we played hockey together, and now we're a wrestling tag team combination. There's one thing we want in our hearts and souls that we've trained for, and that's the tag team belts in the AWA. Right now, Bad Company holds those belts, Bill. We've got an open contract. Anytime they're willing to sign the dotted line, we'll be there.
Okay, Soldat Ustinov, T.J. O'Conn, the team that you two have set out to destroy. Tell me, why do you hate these guys so much?
It's a way of working up the ladder. We got to work our way up to get these shots at these titles. These guys are a couple of tough guys, but they say we're a pushover. No way.
The Americans down constantly. Does this really rub you guys the wrong way?
Absolutely, Bill. We can wrestle with the Russians. We can wrestle with the man from Singapore. We're scientific wrestlers. They wrestle crazy. Hey, we'll wrestle any style it takes to get the job done.
What about a formal challenge to Tanaka and Diamond? Have you done it yet?
No, but we will. Right now, as far as that goes.
Tell Diamond and Tanaka. We're waiting for you, man.
Sign a contract. We'll take those belts away.
Your American pledge to the wrestling fans of the AWA.
The pledge is, we pledge to win the AWA World Tag Team Belts.
That's right.
Okay. For Pro Wrestling Illustrated Magazine, this is Senior Editor Bill Apter, and we'll see you at the matches. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, then we get back to action with Soldat Ustinov and T.J. O'Conn defeating Larry Bacone and David Corjan. This is just a very one-sided tag team match, nothing special about it. We have then the Fan of the Week segment with Donna Gagne. And then we have Ricky Rice and John Paul defeating Brian Costello, and Pete Sanchez. Watching this match, Paul and Rice are pretty green, but they do have a lot of energy, some speed, some spark. They always wear matching gear, so they look great together. They look like a tag team. And the crowd is really definitely starting to get behind Paul and Rice. They are definitely, by the AWA, being slotted into that spot that the Midnight Rockers used to have, right? Where there was all that talk of forming a new Midnight Rockers and just keeping that name. This is, quote-unquote, their new Midnight Rockers, right? John Paul and Ricky Rice. The AWA... remarkably, honestly, I'm going to be honest here because I'm surprised they didn't. They were wise enough to not slap that Midnight Rockers name on them. But they are definitely, right, this young, good-looking, kind of fast, double-teamy type tag team that's supposed to appeal to the crowd and to the women and to the kids and everything else. The same role in the company that the Midnight Rockers held. That's what they're hoping and trying here with Rice and Paul. They used for the finish, they used a running power slam and flying elbow drop combo for the win. I think John Paul came off with the flying elbow. It wasn't the prettiest, but it got the job done, I guess, in this case. Then we have some comments from AWA World Women's Champion Medusa Michelli. Larry Nelson again interviewing Vern Gagne. Then we go on to the Matt Classic match with Greg Gagne from 1984, the Road Warriors versus Fabulous Ones. Great match. Love this match. I'm a tag team junkie, as everybody knows who knows me. Warriors vs. Fabulous Ones. Oh, I love it. It's so good. Then we go to the Big K No segment with Stan Kowalski talking about some of the new talent in the AWA. Again, it's just, I don't know. It's this segment doesn't work for me. And I'm not sure. I don't think it's, I don't know. I don't know what it's effective for. I don't know if Kowalski is just, if Vern just is giving him this job, this position for him. I don't know. I don't feel like this is a very effective use of this. It's only a few minutes. It's not like it's eating up TV time. But even, I don't even think it's the proper use for what they could use with Stan Kowalski. I think he would be very much better utilized in a heel commentator role coupled with Lee Marshall or Ron Trongard and on one of the programs, right? Let's mix it up, make him a heel commentator. And I really think it would be kind of a better use of him. Anyway, though, we can move on. Rocky Mountain Thunder defeats Tony Leon. Thunder, of course, he has his burlap sack. The announcers, you know, always talk about what's in it and everything else. It's supposedly this great mystery. I don't know whether there's ever any resolution to the burlap sack with Rocky Mountain Thunder. We'll see as time progresses here and we watch along through 1988. But they're definitely playing up on the mystery of what's in the sack. You know, is it a live critter, quote unquote? Is it his lunch? Is it his laundry? Who knows? They mention all sorts of kind of silly things. But again, Rocky Mountain Thunder is extraordinarily green. He's a big guy. They're trying something with him. I don't know that it's working. He doesn't really have, again, a very good work rate, even for a big man. He wins the match with a power slam and leg drop combo, and the leg drop was horrific. It looked horrible. They showed at least once a replay, slow motion. It's just like, I wouldn't point that out because that leg drop really did not look well. And then we have some comments from Baron Von Raschke. We come back from a commercial break with comments from Soldat Ustinov and T. Joe Khan. Have I mentioned, I know we talk about Ustinov and Khan, and I talk about how much they're on TV and blah, blah, blah. I liked Soldat Ustinov and T. Joe Khan. I liked them as a team at that time, and it's still, to me, it clicks. It's a very 80s, 88 type team. But it always worked for me. It always clicked, and I always thought they worked well together. I thought they played their roles very well. I thought they worked well as a team. I don't know. I was they're not extraordinary in the ring, but I was a fan of, thought they did well enough. I don't know. Maybe I stand alone in that. Let me know. Give me some feedback. What's everybody else think of Soldat Ustinov and T. Joe Khan? I always enjoyed them as a tag team in the AWA. And we move on to Manny Fernandez defeating Mike Luka. After the match, there's some comments from Manny Fernandez, and this is kind of a big angle here. Wahoo McDaniel comes out, finally has enough, he confronts Manny Fernandez, and Manny attacks McDaniel, and the Raging Bull tears up Wahoo's headdress. So we've been percolating on this feud, this rivalry, why this heat between them. We don't know exactly why, but there's this rivalry, and now, though, Manny has crossed the line. He has tore up Wahoo's ceremonial headdress, and we do have more to come on that in a bit, including some audio here in a little bit that addresses this whole scenario with the headdress. So then we move on to the TV episode on July 16th, 1988, Championship Wrestling. Again, this is a repackaging of the All-Star Wrestling Show with one additional match tacked on there. And again, when I say repackaging, they're not exact duplicates, right? Sometimes the match order is a little different. Comments are taken out. So that, like the stuff like the Big K Nose Fan of the Weeks, those are often pulled out. And there are some edits done, but as far as match and comments, they're the exact same things from the other show. But this one does have the additional match of Mondo Guerrero defeating Pat Tanaka by disqualification. DDP, of course, introduces Tanaka before the match. DDP definitely has, right from the get-go, the gift of gab, right? He could talk. And had that DDP gimmick. Right from the get-go. This was a really, really fun match for me. It was fast-paced, back and forth. Both men, they matched up very well. Mondo, of course, is a great worker. Pat Tanaka, to me, is very underappreciated. I enjoyed this match a lot. I thought these two guys meshed very well in the ring. In the end, Paul Diamond interferes. Bad Company double team Mondo, put a beat down on him. Eventually, the Top Guns run in and save Guerrero. Then we move on to July 16, 1988, the Showboat Sports Pavilion in Las Vegas, Nevada. They do their TV taping for the next month, 750 in attendance. We'll talk about those matches in August when we talk about the TV programs. a house show. Well, this is not really a house show. On July 18, 1988, this is at the Mid-South Coliseum. This is a Memphis. This is a Memphis show here, but it does feature Jerry Lawler, the AWA World Champion, defeating the world-class heavyweight champion, Kerry Von Erich, by disqualification. Lawler versus Von Erich, they're working some matches. That's, of course, is going to play much bigger role in the future of AWA in this year, so stand by and on that. July 22nd, 1988, at the Civic Coliseum in Knoxville, Tennessee, another Memphis card, but it did feature AWA World Heavyweight Champion Jerry Lawler versus Doug Furness. I don't know the results of that. I would assume Lawler was victorious in that match. We have an AWA house show on July 22nd, 1988, the Winona County Fairgrounds of St. Charles, Minnesota. I do not have results, but I do have a card. I don't know whether this was the card that actually ran. Of course, we know about the talent. Things changing. Everything seems to be in a very fluid state of flux with the AWA at this time period. But some of the matches that were advertised or listed, Wahoo McDaniel versus Kurt Hennig, Bad Company versus Greg Gagne and John Paul, Baron Von Raschke versus Soldat Ustinov, Medusa Michelli versus the Magnificent Mimi, and Ricky Rice versus Bob Holly. I would like to say, would venture to say that some of that, probably a lot of that, actually probably changed. I don't know that, though. Then we move on to the next TV episode, which is July 23rd, 1988, episode of All-Star Wrestling. The footage is not really out there for this, at least that I could find, except for the main event of the show, which was joined in progress. And it is Jerry Lawler and Greg Gagne defeating Ricky Chosu and Mr. Saito by DQ. It's an okay match, not too bad. Mr. Saito, of course, will play a much bigger role in the AWA in coming years. But this match was initially scheduled, was supposed to be the Midnight Rockers versus Ricky and Saito. And, of course, with the Rockers no longer in the company, Lawler and Gagne were subbing in at the taping. Then we move on to TV from July 23rd, 1988, Championship Wrestling. This is a pretty good episode here. Larry Nelson and Lee Marshall open the show talking about what's coming up in the program. We have some comments from Bad Company. No DDP with them. Pretty kind of different there, right? Just Bad Company getting to talk. Pretty cool. And then we move on to, here we go. This is what I was talking about earlier. This is Wahoo McDaniel defeats Hunter Thompson. Excuse me. But before the match, we have Jay Strongbow Jr. is there, and he presents Wahoo with a new headdress before the match. So let's go to that audio right now. This is, we talked about it earlier. Manny Fernandez tore up the headdress of Wahoo McDaniel. This was a very a big angle on their television that they did at this time. So here's Jay Strongbow Jr. here to present Wahoo with a new headdress. So let's listen to that audio.
Ladies and gentlemen, before Wahoo McDaniel comes down to the ring, may I introduce to you a man with a presentation for Wahoo McDaniel, Jay Strongbow Jr.
Thank you for having me come down here. I drove all the way across country from Oklahoma because of one thing that just disgusts my stomach. And it disgusts me for one thing, to see Manny Fernandez do to my brother, to the Indian Nation, by taking his feathers and ripping them apart here on TV. Nothing makes me more disgusted. And that's why I came down here. I had these specially made 2 days ago on my reservation for my brother here. And I would hope and wish, Brother Wahoo, that you would accept these for my gracious heart, my Cherokee family, the Cherokee Nation, that if you would put these on your head and bring back the glory of the Indian family.
Comments from Wahoo McDaniel.
I'd be glad to be a Cherokee because all us Indians are united. And I'll tell you one thing. Manny Fernandez hadn't seen the last of it. He might have tore my feathers up, but he's going to have to tear my butt up next time.
Okay. And like I said, Wahoo defeated Hunter Thompson. It just, I mean, seconds, right? It was like, bam, one move, big chop off the ropes, pinned him. Then there's post-match comments from Wahoo McDaniel, who's very fired up. He's fired up at Manny Fernandez about tearing up his headdress. He's fired up in a good way about Jay Strongbow Jr. and the new headdress. So they're really trying to to get this. This, at least they're making an effort. At least there's some story here. At least there's some developments in this feud. You know, at least it's something. It's not just these, you know, in the can kind of comments. They're doing some things here. There is a little bit of heat by it. Wahoo and Manny are very professional, know what they're doing in the ring. So this is a very intriguing centerpiece feud for the AWA at this time. Then we move on. We get some comments from the Top Guns. Again, getting a lot more TV time. Obviously, you know, a lot of focus being put on them. Again, slid into that Midnight Rocker spot that they used to hold. Getting that kind of attention. The babyface, big babyface team building as they're, you know, appear to be doing. They're building them towards that big rivalry, that big showdown with the tag team champions, Bad Company. Who Bad Company is in the next match, defeating Scott Hudson and Randy Greenway. Once again, DDP introduces Bad Company prior to the match. I did notice in this match, the commentators really stressed a lot about the number of diamond dolls DDP has. It's, I don't know why they mentioned it several times about how he has all these diamond dolls. I don't know. I guess it's 1988. It just seemed like a kind of an absurd thing to key in on. But this was a pretty standard TV tag match. Bad Company controlled the majority of the match. At the end, they do this finisher. Bad Company used the finisher where, in this case, Tanaka draped Greenway across the rope, the middle rope. Right, he held him by his legs, had him, you know, arms and neck draped across the second rope. And then Paul Diamond came off the ropes from the opposite side, leapfrogged Tanaka from behind, and gave kind of a splash to Greenway as he was hung up in the ropes. That was the kind of the finish they were using at this time. It's okay. It's not bad. It looks good. If you really dissect the effectiveness of it, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. But it was well enough. I really think Bad Company had enough skill. They probably could have utilized something a little better, but so be it. And then we move on. Lee Marshall interviews Chavo and Mondo Guerrero, who give a just a typical kind of a fiery babyface promo. Nothing really to write home about here. But, you know, for everything that people say about the AWA at this time period, the tag division is very intriguing and entertaining to me. I mean, we got, you know, just at the top here, we got, you know, Bad Company, Top Guns, Ustinov and Khan, the Guerreros. This to me is a little underappreciated and is kind of the highlight of the AWA at this time. I was always a big fan of Bad Company. I think Top Guns had some potential. Again, they're very, very green. I've always talked about how I like Ustinov and Khan. The Guerreros, obviously, they're the Guerreros, right? They're talented. Everybody knows that. But I just think the tag division is something that is really, really fun to watch at the AWA in this time. And I know people, again, put down this period, but I think that causes them to kind of overlook this part of these shows. Then we have Rocky Mountain Thunder defeating Mike Samani. Samani has this wicked weird comb over hairstyle. You got to see this thing. It's so weird looking. And then, you know, during the match, this comb over blows back, right? It kind of, you know, blows back to more of its natural state. And it really shows that, man, he has a very receding hairline. And I guess was trying to hide it. I don't know how he thought that was going to last through the course of a wrestling match. I mean, you know, come on, somebody, just give in. Let nature take its course. It's cool. Don't worry about it. Some of the crowd really seemed to get behind Rocky Mountain Thunder, particularly kids, right? He's kind of that kind of gimmick. But Thunder, again, Thunder is very, very green. He doesn't know how to keep the flow of the match going. You know, he hits a move, doesn't know how to follow up or what to do from there. Just he appears pretty lost in the ring. I think he was kind of pushed in this position way before he was ready for this kind of attention. You know, again, it was very slow moving for an enhancement match. It didn't really showcase Thunder well. He didn't have a move set, right? I mean, even for a big guy, right? There just wasn't a lot there that he showcased. It was just very slow moving, and he won with a bear hug. Whatever. I don't know whether Rocky Mountain Thunder could have worked as a gimmick per se, if you had someone maybe with a little more experience, maybe a little more knowledge. I'm not knocking the guy. He's definitely working, trying. He's trying to get it over. He just doesn't have the experience and the knowledge to make it happen. We move on then in the show, some comments from Soldat Ustinov and T. Joe Khan. Then we have Curt Hennig defeating Greg Robertson. In this, Curt Hennig comes out too bad to the bone. I don't know how often or how long he did that. I've never noticed that before, but he does here. And he's accompanied by Medusa Michelli, and they're still referring to him as Cool Curt Hennig. I'm like, eesh, that's not a good nickname, right? Curt Hennig didn't even really need a nickname. He was so good and so talented, but Cool Curt Hennig, I'm like, eesh, come on. But you do notice that Curt is really, really starting to look and has some mannerisms, some styling is in the ring, that he will take that next level as Mr. Perfect very, very soon. You start to see that, right? The hair's kind of grown out to that look. This kind of his mannerisms, his facials, and again, the skill set is really, it's really what will become and he'll be known for as the Mr. Perfect character. Then we go to Larry Nelson talking to Vern Gagne and speaking of Curt Hennig. And let's listen to this, because this is, again, some important in audio. You know, I know it's kayfabe, blah, 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 but it is important audio in the history of the AWA 1988. So let's listen to this, Larry Hennig talking to Vern Gagne.
Ladies and gentlemen, with me now, former world champion Vern Gagne, and I've got the big question for you. But before we talk about that, we just saw Curt Hennig wrestle, and as I understand it, this young man is in big trouble.
Yes, he has. He's not lived up to his contractual agreements in the past year, and of course that big match at the title match that Medusa Michelli had with Brandy May. He deliberately interfered again and then attacked Big Thunder, Rocky Mountain Thunder. And by the way, had he not got out of the ring when he did after that match, and that big man would have got his hands on him, perhaps Stanley Blackburn would not have had to suspend him. But that's exactly what Stanley has done. Curt Hennig has been suspended probably indefinitely here in the AWA. Now, back to your question.
All right. You promised us a big announcement from the AWA. The fans want to know. We've had phone calls. I want to know. What is this big blockbuster news?
Well, Larry, I'd love to tell you, but I just can't at this time. I know I said I would have it this week, but we've got it, but we're just that far from putting the whole thing together. And I do not want to make that until that little bit is that little bit. We've got to get it right together, because it is a bombshell, and in it, we'll set wrestling on its ears. And I want to have everything right before we make that big announcement, and I hope you can appreciate
it. So, in other words,
the fans will be patient and appreciate that.
He's going to keep us on pins and needles for a little bit longer, ladies and gentlemen. How about next week?
Well, I think by next week we'll have it.
Well, there you have it. Right, Vern says, right? Curt Hennig has been suspended indefinitely by the AWA because he has not met contractual obligations and for repeated interference in matches, particularly in the recent Medusa and Brandy May match. Yeah, okay. Well, that's how they sold it. That's how they build it. You know, I guess you got to say something, and that's what they said. But see you, Curt, and we'll see you again soon in the WWE or WWF at that time. And like I said, he's really nailed down what would become Mr. Perfect, and he will take those tools into that role very, very soon. So no more Curt Hennig left in the AWA. Again, I don't know if there's any matches in the can that will air or whatever else, but Curt Hennig no longer in the AWA. Apparently they couldn't reach a contract. We've always heard those stories, right? That Curt went to Vern, said, "This is what I want to stay." Vern says, "Yeah, right." And Curt said, "Bye," and went to the WWE. And more than likely, I would guess, again, I haven't really researched this, I would guess Curt had an offer from WWF. And he went to Vern saying, "This is, you know," not saying this is the offer, but giving him the number per se that, you know, of to either match or beat, whichever he, you know, what he thought was best. And when obviously Vern was not going to do that. And so Curt is on to the WWF. But Vern Gagne did also say that he cannot announce what he promised he would announce, right? He says he has this big blockbuster news. He said last week on television that he was going to announce it this week. He'd have this news, but he can't now, right? It's not finalized. It's so close. Maybe next week. I don't know what this is. Part of me, my gut says this is the return of Jimmy Snuka, because that seems to be a very centerpiece of AWA, is trying to get Snuka back to the TV tapings. And supposedly they've had agreements in place for him to come back to the TV tapings and something's happening, but they're still in discussions. That's what my gut says. This is about the return of Jimmy Snuka to the AWA, but I don't know. We'll see, maybe, whether there'll be a payoff in this or whether it'll just be dropped. It's really kind of hard to tell at this point. So now we have our main event on the show. We have the Top Guns versus Soldat Ustinov and Tejo Khan. This match is pretty wild. I do wish, again, I've mentioned this before, but I wish they would really spell check their names on the screen, right? We have Soldat Ustinov, who's on TV all the time, you know, all the, with matches, comments, he's all over their television programming, and they misspelled his name Soldad. Again, they're still doing Tejo Khan, Joe on lots of the shows. I really wish they had a little more quality control. I mean, it's not that difficult to get those things in check. You just have to kind of care to do it. But anyway, the crowd was definitely into this match. They're definitely starting to get behind the Top Guns. When everybody's in the ring, the match just kicks off into a four-way brawl. Gets right to it. Gets the action hopping. This is definitely kind of a little more action-filled match, a little more heat-filled match than what AWA is kind of accustomed to at this period. But it was a very solid, fun tag match back and forth, and it ends with Ustinov and Khan getting disqualified for throwing John Paul over the top rope. So, of course, there are future matches between these two. I'm enjoying both of them, and I thought the match was fun to watch. And then we close the show with some comments from Magnificent Mimi and then comments from Medusa Michelli. They're really pushing that feud and this match coming up somewhere in the future. And that's how they close the show. And then we go on. There's a scheduled house show on July 23rd, 1988 at the North Dakota State Fairgrounds in Minot, North Dakota. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. I have no card or results for that. I don't know if it happened or not, but it was on the calendar at some point in time. Then we're back in Memphis on July 25th, 1988, at the Mid-South Coliseum. Once again, Jerry Lawler versus Kerry Von Erich. It went to a one-hour time limit draw in a no-DQ match. So Lawler and Von Erich are working matches around. Again, this match will be, by the end of the year, very, very important in this timeline and in the history of AWA. So keep your eyes on that. We now have some more information from Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer. This is from the July 25th issue. They talked about the July 9th Columbus, Nebraska show. They had some no-shows, which was Kurt Hennig, Jerry Sags, and Brad Ringens. I didn't even know Brad Ringens was supposed to be there. Apparently, I guess he was booked for it and no-showed. Jerry Sags, I was under the impression, though, that I thought Nasty Boys were already gone. I don't know if that's a surprise. And, of course, we know this is where Kurt's out of there and on his way. They say that AWA is planning to run Anaheim, California regularly with Red Bastien booking those shows. We have another no-show on the 7/16 TV taping. Cousin Luke no-showed. So we may already be seeing the end of Cousin Luke in the AWA. Around for about a month, it looks like, and that's about it. Their next TV taping is scheduled for August 20th, and it's supposed to see the AWA debut of Jimmy Valiant. So we will see that in the future. That will be when we cover September. In a couple months. Then we have a house show, July 29th, 1988, Walshfield in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, 200 estimated in attendance. Saw Wahoo McDaniel defeat Tejo Khan, who was subbing for Brian Knobbs. Baron Von Raschke defeated Soldat Ustinov. The AWA World Tag Team Champions Bad Company defeated the Top Guns. The AWA International TV Champion Greg Gagne defeated Terminator 2, who was subbing for Kurt Hennig. By disqualification, Terminator 1 defeated Stoney Burke, who this match apparently was substituting for what was going to be a Ray Stevens versus Jerry Sags match. So, again, Nasty Boys not in attendance at this show. But we do see the Terminators popping up here, so I don't know whether they will be on TV in the near future. I don't know if that was what I would call a fair trade, but we'll see here. Then in a Memphis show, July 29, 1988, in Columbus, Mississippi, Eddie Gilbert defeated AWA World Heavyweight Champion Jerry Lawler by disqualification. Then we have the TV show from July 30th, 1988, All-Star Wrestling. That I could find, the footage is not out there except for two matches. There is the Matt Classic match with Greg Gagne, which is Lord Littlebrook and Little Coco versus Johnny Ray and Little Tokyo. And then Mondo and Chavo Guerrero defeat Mike Samani and Vernon Deaton. All right, we move on now to the July 30th, 1988 episode of Championship Wrestling on ESPN. Sold out Usinoff defeated Greg Robertson. Again, they're still spelling T. Joe Khan as T.Joe on the graphics. Give me a break, people. Vern Gagne still teasing a blockbuster announcement next week on the show. We'll see, Vern. We'll see. We get some comments from Brandy May, followed by some comments from Medusa Michelli. John Paul and Ricky Rice defeated Hunter Thompson and Dennis Stamp. John Paul and Ricky Rice are now coming out to Def Leppard Pour Some Sugar on Me. So I guess that seems fitting for a babyface tag team at this time, or someone who is stripping for a living. Paul and Rice are now being referred to as the Top Guns by the commentators. The Top Guns do win after Paul whips Thompson into the ropes, drops down, and Ricky Rice jumps and then hits with an elbow. It was very awkward. I don't even know what it was. It's like Ricky Rice jumped, landed, and then elbowed him. I don't know what was supposed to happen. I don't know if it's supposed to be a kind of a jumping, flying elbow, and the timing was off with Thompson coming off the ropes. That's what I guess, but it was very awkward. Didn't look very effective. I really think they probably should have picked Thompson up and either done it again or went to a plan B. The commentators are talking about and referring to the Top Guns as the top contenders to the tag titles. There was a plug, a little commercial for bringing the AWA to your area, including a number to do so. We get some comments from the Top Guns. And then we get the next match. Pat Tanaka defeated Randy Greenway. DDP cuts off Larry Nelson because Larry started to introduce Tanaka. And of course, then DDP does the introductions himself. The finish comes as Greenway goes for a backdrop and Tanaka catches him with a DDT. Lee Marshall talks to AWA World Champion Jerry Lawler. Baron Von Raschke defeated Kevin Collins. For some reason, the camera shows Magnificent Mimi sitting in the front row. They don't really do anything further with that, so I'm not sure what was happening there. This was a one-sided match. Baron controls throughout and wins with the Iron Claw. Of course, we can't have an episode of TV without some comments from Sold Out Usinoff and T. Joe Khan. Then we have the Big K Nose segment with Stan Kowalski, where Big K rants on Vern and Greg Gagne. Again, I'm still not sure what these are accomplishing. They just repeat other facts. Things don't, I don't know. Doesn't not very effective. I said that earlier. But the Big K did say that Jimmy Snuka is back in the AWA and coming back. So we'll see. We had Vern earlier hyping a big announcement. He's saying Jimmy Snuka's back. Are these the same things? We'll see in the near future. We do get some comments from Kurt Hennig here, even though he is pretty much out of the company. They've already announced he's been suspended indefinitely. We get some comments. And Medusa Michelli defeats Brandy May, and Kurt Hennig is ringside for Medusa. Brandy May runs to the back and brings out Rocky Mountain Thunder. The referee says Hennig has a managerial license, so he can be at ringside, but Thunder doesn't have, so he has to leave. It's a back-and-forth match. The crowd's into it. May's not on Michelli's level here. They very much messed up the finish of this match. Michelli rolled up Brandy May, and she just kind of over-rolled through it. Michelli just held down May's arms with the pin. It was sloppy. Didn't really work. I bet I would venture to guess Medusa was probably a little agitated with this finish. Then Rocky Mountain Thunder came out after the match to confront Hennig. This is some of what Vern was talking about earlier, and I don't know whether this match aired in one of those other package shows earlier, and I have missed that and forgot that. I don't know if Vern was referring to this from the TV tapings. Everything seems kind of out of order here. It's very kind of weird and awkward, but, that's to be expected at this time. We do get some post-match comments from Brandy May and Rocky Mountain Thunder to close out the show. And then to close the month, we have a house show on July 30th, 1988 in Tampa, Florida. A crowd of over 1,000 to this. But this is not an AWA show. This is a Eddie Graham Memorial card. And on this show, world-class champion Kerry Von Erich defeated AWA champion Jerry Lawler by DQ. And the AWA World Tag Team Champions Bad Company defeated Mike Graham and Steve Kern. That would be a fun match to see. I'd like to see that match. So that closes out the month in the AWA. So let's go. We did have two questions submitted to the show. Let's see what I could do to give a little response. We'll give it my best shot here. From Mark Salen, who submitted this on Facebook, he said, "What were the true causes of the demise of the AWA? Also, how frugal was Vern Gagne? Well, Mark, here you go. There's a lot of speculation on what the true cause of the demise, right? A lot of people claim that Vern didn't keep up with the times. Vern wasn't willing to pay to keep talent, and he struggled on that. There was speculation that Vern owed money on different things. When I talked to Greg Gagne in an interview, he said that probably one of the biggest nails in their coffin was that they were supposed to have another TV deal. Basically, and in the course of this TV deal, this agreement with this and that, it ended up costing them their advertising dollars from the ESPN show, which basically dried up this huge form of incoming revenue for them. You can listen to my Greg Gagne interview. He gives it all the details on that. And he says that's the beginning of the end right there. When that advertising, those advertising dollars were gone, bam, they were on their way done. Yes, Vern is known as being frugal. He had a view in his mind of what certain things were worth. But I do venture to guess some of that is based on him also knowing what he could pay. So, you know, there's probably a balance there, right? He was not in a position to match dollars really with Vince McMahon or with the Turner Company for contracts. So, yes, he was frugal, but to be fair, there was also a sense of he knew what he could pay. So it wasn't necessarily all frugal as much as some of it was just budget. It was what it was, right? And indeed, if they have lost all that advertising revenue, you know, they couldn't offer to pay what a lot of other places were paying. And then I also have a question from Lance Lumley on X. Why do you think so many so-called critics dismiss the mid to late 80s AWA as a whole? It seems when it comes to books, etc., this period gets passed over. I agree, Lance. I really do. That's why I'm doing this series here on 88 AWA. And I would venture to guess there's lots of things involved. Part of it is people just dismiss it off as not being interesting, right? There was no talent there in their mind. That's what they say. There's no talent. It was just a hodgepodge. It was very chaotic. So I think they use that as an excuse when to me, some of that makes it even more fascinating, right? That they're doing in these circumstances. And some of that chaos can make for good stories in my eyes. Some of it probably is the fact that you're a little, there would be, you know, some limit to who you can talk to, right? Some of the key players are no longer around. I mean, Vern's no longer with us. Some of these wrestlers are no longer with us. And if you talk to Greg, you know, are you getting straight stories on some of this stuff and whatever else? So I don't know. I just think if you're talking about this time period, most people who call themselves critics, who whatever, look back and they see WCW or NWA and the WWF as being one level, and the AWA being a different level, you know, on the way down, and they just really dismiss it because most of them have already written off the AWA as dead by this time. And I had this nostalgic part, but I do have an awkward, weird appreciation for this time period of the AWA. I do find many aspects of it very, very interesting. I do think they do have some talent. There are some things hidden in there. And I think there's a couple of talents in late AWA that's not even here yet, that we're from where we're talking in 88, that I'm excited to get to in the future. So I don't know. I think people just dismiss it as being kind of a dead horse and they don't want to beat it and they just don't want to talk about it. There's nothing there worthwhile to talk about. When I think it's a very fascinating time for this company. It's, you know, I'm not saying it's, you know, ticket-wise, financial-wise, it's clearly not the highlight of the AWA, but it still is it's a very interesting time to me to discuss and look at. So I am in agreement with you that it gets passed over. I wish more people dove into it a little more and gave it a relook and everything else. But that's just my opinion. So, all right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll close the show out, so stick around.
AWA Championship Wrestling. The AWA presents the greatest stars in professional wrestling, bringing you the best in mat action.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, thank you for listening to this. I hope you enjoyed the next installment of our AWA Deep Dive. We will come back next month with another when we talk about August of 1988. Make sure you follow me on X at the Dave Dynasty. Make sure you go check out the WrestleCopia Network of Podcasts. And all those great shows that are out there. My next episode of Wrestling Nostalgia will come out this Wednesday, and it will feature guest Corsita Korchenko. We talk about getting started, the UWF, Bill Watts, reality TV, and much, much more. It's a pretty interesting interview. You don't want to miss that. Once again, thank you for following, thank you for your support, and thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And until that next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menaker thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.